We're going to Barry Kenny now, and usually when you introduce Barry Kenny, it's to do with a delay in trains or the fact that there isn't a tea trolley on the train to Waterford. But today we're talking to Barry about something completely different, because he's recently returned from a volunteering mission in Ukraine, where he worked in a kitchen serving the front line, and he's on the line now. How are you doing, Barry?
I'm good, Ray. How are you? There's also lots of good news we've been talking about in the railway as well.
Right. Yes, there is. There's always good news as well. Sorry about that. Yes, yeah. But today, as I say, something completely different. So the end of April, was it, that you spent a week in Lviv?
Yeah, Lviv, which is obviously in western Ukraine, about 90 minutes or so from the Polish border. I took the train into there, actually, and I was working with an organization called Frontline Kitchen, and they prepare meals, so pre-packed and dehydrated meals that are then sent out to the front to serve the military, to serve the defenders of Ukraine.
And you volunteered before in Moldova?
Yeah, last year I would have, for a couple of weeks, went to Refugee Support Europe. They were looking after Ukrainian refugees in Moldova, in Chisinau, the capital city. Moldova would have the highest number of Ukrainian refugees per head of population, and it is in itself quite a poor country, of course. So that organisation had set up what they call a dignity centre there, which was effectively like a kind of a mini shop with free credits and a community centre that Ukrainian refugees could use. So, as I spent time there last year, but when it was this opportunity, when I became aware of it, it was something I thought would be quite interesting to do, and something quite practical, I suppose, to help the people that are literally putting their bodies on the line.
Because there's a real connection then, isn't there? Frontline kitchens, so you are helping prepare food that goes to the front line, to these men who are putting their lives on the line. To maintain freedom and democracy in Ukraine, and I suppose they're doing the rest of Europe a favour as well.
Completely, and it was that then the dynamic that you actually see there as well. This organisation actually was set up in 2014 by local women in Lviv when the invasion of the Donbass happened, and obviously the occupation of Crimea. But needless to say, when the full scale invasion happened last February, that their needs just exponentially increased. They certainly increased their own activity, and ultimately it expanded to international volunteers. A man called Richard Woodruff from Britain is very heavily involved. Went there, I suppose, has certainly kind of raised the awareness and the fundraising for it, and also then the awareness for international volunteers and the opportunity for international volunteers. So you had people from like all over the world. You had people like me who were there for a relatively short time. You had people who'd kind of taken longer term sabbaticals, you know, 3-6 months, who were there also. But the mainstay, and was the backbone, was the local women still, who day in, day out, since the full-scale invasion, have been volunteering to prepare what is up to 15,000 servings a day of things like borscht, which is the Ukrainian soup, and other foods and cakes and things like that to get to the front.
And borscht, the main ingredient is beetroot, is it?
It is. I became intimately familiar with beetroot, Ray, in a way I didn't expect, perhaps. It is. And in terms of a vegetable to be peeling and shredding, which is what we're doing, it's quite a messy one as well. As I say, that's the main one. But you've got potatoes, you've got carrots, cabbage as well. And as I say, we had a lot of other produce as well, you know, kind of mushroom-based food, a lot of cakes as well. So huge operation. In a kind of a yard and a small enough building in the city centre of Lviv, in terms of taking delivery, preparing the food, dehydrating it, packing it, and sending it out again.
And was there chat when you were there about the real connection, as we mentioned already, and the fact, and I suppose this is the case, that one of those meals that you prepared could be somebody's last meal?
Yeah, I mean, there's an upbeat environment, because as I say, you've got a lot of people coming together that obviously believe in a common cause. We had military people in and out. A lot of the time it was distributed by other people, by other volunteers, but we did have people from the military in and out of the centre as well. And there's a resilience, and we know that from afar. You don't have to be there to know that. There's also a very kind of a confidence and a determination to succeed. Of course, everybody from the volunteers volunteers to the people who called the centre. You know, they have family in the front line, they have relatives, they have people they care about, and when something like we've seen over recent nights in all over Ukraine happen, you know, the worry and upset is there, but there's a real determination and a belief that, you know, success will come and that, you know, they will force the Russians out. And obviously we sincerely hope that's the case.
I watched your video. You visited a cemetery, and is that a tradition, the flags and the photographs, or is that just something that has happened because of the war?
Well, certainly it has very much happened. There's the cemetery, because the main part of the cemetery is a very old cemetery next door to it. But this particular area was for the military, a military area. So you had the national flags, you tended to have the flags of the units or the flags of the city as well. And very, I suppose, kind of ornate and personally dedicated graves, always with the photo of largely the man who had died in military uniform, often with personal photos and often with personal artifacts. You know, the man who is, you know, fishing is clearly his passion, and the photo of him fishing, and then little sculptures of fish on the grave. You had, you know, things like a 29-year-old man. There was a drawing from his son and daughter on the grave. It was a very affecting and very upsetting area. Because of all the flags, people tended to be, who were at the graveyard, tended to be kind of concealed from view. You'd almost be on top of them before you realised it. Yeah. And there was an older woman, and before I knew it, I was quite close to her, and all I could hear was sobbing over the grave of her son. And you know, it hits you in you know, it just unfortunately, it just takes your breath away in completely the wrong way. It is hugely upsetting to see.
And it goes without saying that Putin is public enemy number one. And I didn't know how to feel about the young children being given rifles to point at a photograph of Putin, and then you were in a bar where you were given a pellet gun, an automatic pellet gun, which you're drink to fire at a photograph of Putin. I suppose that's a release, is it? Is that some sort of release for people?
I mean, we all know in times of stress and in times of extreme pressure, you know what I mean, with the people that we're with and with the people that we're sharing that with, people, there can be a humour and a dark humour in it. And I know exactly what you're saying. You kind of think long term, well, you know, what is this do to a community and society? But you know, this is an existential situation. You literally have got a neighboring country that is denying your right to exist. So you do kind of look at it and see, as you say, kind of this was in a lovely city centre area where there's bands playing, where there's candy floss being served in Lviv on a lovely spring weekend, and beside that you have, as I say, a kind of a toy target, and with kids and adults being handled this kind of, you know, like the old play guns we had growing up, to fire at a picture of Putin, and again in a bar that was kind of one of these hidden bars, which is something of a Ukrainian tradition, where you've got the targets as well. You know, as you say, it can be a little bit shocking, but I'm certainly not one to judge on the release valves that people use in something that, you know, that man actually has caused to happen.
Why do you do it, Barry?
It's something, I suppose, since the start of this, it's kind of been something that I believe strongly, that, you know, a country has to have the right to, you know, to choose its own future. I think that, you know, like you and I, Ray, have grown up in a world where our continent has largely been at peace, and you've got somebody that's really trying to deny that right for a country to choose its own path and trying to upend that. So I believe in it very strongly. I have, just as well, by being interested in it, by following it, become motivated to do things. And look, it's a small thing. You know, there are people, many people in Ireland that are hosting Ukrainian refugees, and you know that, which is just a huge, enormous contribution. I'll be honest with you, I kind of didn't feel like a kind of sit at ease until I kind of had tried to go and do a bit. And as I say, again, it was only for a relatively short time. There are people that I've met out there I've met other Irish people out there. I've met people from across Europe, from the US, who are gone for really quite extended stays to do what they can. Not just there, volunteering in far more risky places like, Kharkiv and others.
Because Lviv is at the western extremity, nearly on the Polish border, and life is continuing pretty much, I suppose, against the backdrop of war, but as normal as you can get in that situation. You're very honest.
Yeah.
You said, that there's nearly a selfishness about volunteering because you get so much from it.
Yeah, and I suppose I learned that last summer in Chisinau. I'm somebody who kind of follows the news and watches the news or whatever, and almost kind of passively in the past, and it did take me, and this was a very enjoyable experience, and it's an odd thing to say, and you feel slightly uncomfortable saying it, but the fact that you kind of are meeting people that, with all different backgrounds, with all different life experiences, but who are united by kind of this common belief and want to participate in this way, you get an awful lot out of it, and the kind of, seeing the women who kind of set up this organization, talking to them, learning more about what they're trying to do and been through, you appreciate it a lot. And even when you do those short contributions, there is huge appreciation back as well. I think the fact that people there can see the people from around the world are still thinking
solidarity,
about them, are still solidarity, wanting to help them, it goes a long way. It genuinely does.
So not a word about Irish Rail there. Barry Kenny, thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us today. We'll talk again. Thanks Barry.
Ray.
Thank you. Bye. Cormac is on Drive Time. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday evening.
It's the Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.